Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening from Fort Lauderdale. This is Nate Klarfeld with Stonewall Live. Tonight, my guest is Adam Zaboski, a nurse who has 12 years' experience and has changed things around with his Truvada Horse social media campaign. In 2014, he was the subject of a front-page New York Times article. We'll talk about that in a minute. Welcome, Adam. How are you tonight?
Hello. Thank you. I'm doing great, and thanks so much for having me.
Great. Okay. First question. So you've been an activist for how many years?
I think I got my start in 2014, really. So some years are more active than others, depending on what's going on in the LGBTQ health world. So that's where I got my start, mostly okay. with Truvada advocacy and getting the word out in kind of new and interesting ways. That's the way I put it. Because one approach is not going to work for everyone. So I kind of take my own little special individualized way of getting the word out there.
Okay, so before you're an RN, did you have a background in any sort of advocacy, like when you were in high school or college or anything like that? Did it bite you after you became involved in the medical field?
Well, in my undergrad years at City College and then at SF State University, I was getting into the healthcare world and volunteering as an HIV test counselor, and then actually working for some nonprofits here. And when you're kind of on the front lines with queer folks talking about HIV and getting them health information about themselves, that's when you really learn about a lot of stuff going on in the medical world and new research, and that was kind of the time I found my voice and reaching out to a larger audience and getting the word out there. And mostly at the time, those years, I was talking about PrEP and kind of dispelling some of the sex negative words and language and articles out there, and kind of bringing people a different way of thinking about this. At the time, a kind of a new thing, which was PrEP, and that was around 2014.
Could you, for some of my listeners may or may not know what the acronym PrEP stands for, could you go over that a little bit?
Yes, PrEP, in terms of HIV, is pre-exposure prophylaxis, and it's when you take an HIV medication to prevent infection. It's preventative, and this really started in 2012. The FDA approved Truvada for PrEP as a daily pill to take to prevent HIV. Since then, there's new ones. There's Descovy now. And then Truvada became generic, so there's different pharmaceutical companies that can make it. Also, there's an injectable PrEP now called Apretude. So lots has changed since 2014 in terms of prevention in a pharmacological way.
Right. So this is used by non-HIV positive, I guess, gay men or people that may be in a susceptible group, and they use it every day. Is that correct? The PrEP is every day. Well, the injectable, I think, is last how long?
So it started as a daily medication, and then new research showed that you can take it on an as-needed basis. It's not actually approved by the FDA, but there's lots of research that supports its use. It has different names, like intermittent PrEP or PrEP on demand. And then Apretude, the injectable, is once every 2 months you have to go and get the injection.
Right. And this is very effective, I have read from the studies, of preventing HIV.
injectables? Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Both,
both
the oral and the injectable.
As long as you're doing the right dosing and you're getting your shots as you are prescribed, then yes, it is extremely effective.
So what are the barriers that people have had? You mentioned you mentioned a little bit there with the spelling and rumors. What are some of the barriers that people have had and people have today about taking PrEP?
Right. So back in the early years, one of the major things that was happening was this sex stigma and sex negative way of looking at prevention. Word was going around that if you are taking PrEP, it's because you are like a quote slut or quote whore or other kind of sex negative terms used. And that those terms kind of was a barrier and prevented people from accessing it. And what I kind of worked in this kind of activism world was dispelling these myths and reframing PrEP as not something that you do because you're a slut, but it's something you do because you really care about yourself and your community and you want to protect yourself using a new and extremely effective way. And that's how I approached my work at that time. And one of these terms that was widely circulated on media and social media was the term Truvada whore. And it was, you know, used in all sorts of articles that were shared around. And that's kind of one of the main ways that people would initially hear about PrEP was this term. And what I helped do was to kind of reframe the term and kind of, you know, use it as something positive, like you're retaking a negative term and using it in a kind of lighthearted and fun way. And then, you know, there were T-shirts that I had printed, and this was all for, like, I used that money for fundraising for Age Life Cycle here.
Good for you.
And it all kind of spiraled in a good way. Lots of people reaching out, wanting to talk about this Truvada horror thing and newspapers and whatnot. So it was a very interesting time for me, and it was great to be able to kind of reclaim this term and spread actual information about it and help people learn about it and then kind of get a prescription, which was actually my job, was to help people get access to PrEP. And, you know, as a nurse, I would help refill medications and do lab work and answer all sorts of questions. So at all levels, I was really involved in getting PrEP out there.
Well, I know there was some the medical community was not always on our side or your side on this. I know that AIDS Healthcare Foundation, or better known as AHF, at the beginning, years and years ago, was an opponent of PrEP, and but not only that, it just in reading the article, I became I was the New York Times article I'm referring to. I'm sorry. MDs, internal medicine doctors, give out statins to prevent heart disease. But there was a huge, I mean, you know what I'm talking about. So there was this huge resistance by medical people who treated HIV susceptible populations. That's a long word, HIV susceptible. Anyway, who treated those populations. And they, you know, and then the statistics, somebody, some brilliant epidemiologist made this little graph on this Times article. I'm going to give a link on it on the page later. It took two, if 250 people take statins, you know, that those are the heart, you know, drugs that help prevent heart attacks, it prevents one heart attack. If 61 people take PrEP, it prevents one HIV infection. It's like four times more effective in preventing a life-threatening, horrible disease, because I have it, I know it, and doctors were resistant to it, to the effect that the largest provider of HIV AIDS treatment people, the AIDS Healthcare Foundation, was against it for a while. How do you fight that?
Ooh, well, I myself can't do much alone, but thankfully I met a lot of activists and people in higher levels of power and influence who were able to really speak out about, especially with the AIDS Healthcare Foundation, with Michael Weinstein was doing.
Right.
I mean, he was putting out so many advertisements in all sorts of gay publications.
Full-page ads in 26
full-page
papers.
Full-page ads and, underground rail stations, subways, buses, billboards everywhere, like millions of dollars used to really tell fairy tales about what PrEP is and really shine a very negative light on it and create so much HIV stigma, like demonizing HIV positive people. And this is money that is part of a nonprofit, and people expect that the money they donate would go to actually helping people, when in fact this money was spreading lies about extremely effective preventative medication. Very sad time in the world. They've changed since then. They're more open to it, prescribing PrEP. Michael Weinstein hasn't really said much about PrEP these days. I think he knows he was wrong, so that's a positive.
Yeah. Well, they fired their medical director. Yeah, I know, and he's not a physician. I want to put that in there. On top of all the horrible things he's done. I'm just joking. But I'm just going to add this in here. If anyone listening out there wants to call in and ask a question or make a comment, the number is 563-999-3040. I'll do that one more time. 563-999-3040, and it's on the page you're listening to this podcast on. Okay, I did it. Okay, so let's get into your other soapbox, which is what besides PrEP. You have several soapboxes. I've read all about you. And you have been very active in getting people vaccinated against the monkeypox virus. Tell us about that.
Oh, right. Monkeypox. Well, that's new and exciting and fresh. I do what I can. I talk to people about monkeypox. It was very hard early on in the vaccination months. Getting people to where they need to go, and the lines were so long, and there was such a minute kind of excess in terms of the Jynneos vaccines. I don't really have a lot of sway or power in terms of getting vaccines to people, but we all kind of spoke out about the lack of response from, federal level. And it was very scary for a while. And I think things are looking good in terms of case trends and the numbers. Yes. Numbers kind of peaked in late July. And as more and more people are thankfully getting vaccinated, those case numbers are dropping off a lot. People are, getting their second doses now. And this community, they, care a lot about their health, and they were really working very, very hard to get vaccinated. And that kind of just says a lot about us as people and how much we care about ourselves and our community. And it's really affirming to see these case numbers go down and the vaccination rates very high. So very exciting to see these changes. Good. But a few months ago, it was a different story for sure.
Yeah, no, I know. I saw the numbers. We were a big nexus of new cases and big cases down here in South Florida. Several friends of mine came down with it, and it was incredibly painful for them and painful to watch and go through the treatment. But it was unusual because it was like a deja vu for me. I'm a long-term survivor of HIV. I went through the whole thing in the mid to early 90s with being I use the word the viral underclass because there was very little no one mentioned it for a long time. There was horrible stigma within our community and outside the community. Getting the medication was a nightmare. I mentioned that to you earlier when we had our little pre-chat, that there was, you know, you didn't know where to go. It was very expensive. Nobody would pay for it. We didn't have Ryan White. We didn't have aid service organizations. So I was like a viral underclass. And then I saw monkeypox, and it was the same thing again. You know, people the vaccines weren't available. The distribution was hopscotch, haphazard. Some parts of the country, it was impossible to get. I have friends that don't live in the Big Ten. I call them the Big Ten. The Big Ten cities where the gay populations are large. I call it the Big Ten, yeah. And they're still waiting. They've traveled here. I have a friend who runs a guest house here, and there was a blurb on Facebook that Broward County had, that somebody gave out the number to call to, you know, get on the website to make appointments. And he said the guest house filled in from people from like Georgia and Mississippi and Tennessee that had flown in here just to get the monkeypox. That's ridiculous.
Oh, wow. That is very sad to hear.
It is sad to hear. I mean, your world is in California and my world is in South Florida, and we're, you know, we think we've got, you know, everything going for us, but no, I really had deja vu. I'll stop talking. So I want to ask you about, cause I didn't know anything about it till I saw, your hashtag, and could you explain what DoxyPrep is?
Oh, absolutely. I love talking about doxycycline.
Thank you. Oh, good.
So DoxyPrep is not FDA approved, but what it basically is taking doxycycline, which is a very common antibiotic, very useful antibiotic, as a way to prevent STIs after sex. STIs including, you know, the bacterial ones, chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis.
Mm-hmm.
So the way it's been studied as of late is taking 200 milligrams after 72 hours, within the 72-hour window after a sexual encounter. And the preliminary reports, which have been published already, have shown extremely high levels of protection. Preventing infections. In fact, the placebo arm was closed due to the high efficacy of people getting the actual medication. The study, there was an arm in San Francisco, and I referred a lot of people to the study who were participants. And after a year on the study, they kind of were graduated, basically. Mm-hmm. And they were able to access, well, some weren't. They received a letter from the study director that said, you know, blah, 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 they participated in the study and they took this medication and it's not FDA approved, but has shown extremely high levels of protection from STIs. Mm-hmm. as kind of like a doctor's letter recommending the prescription. But it's not, you know, widely used right now. It's kind of hard to get. Mm-hmm. I hear a lot of people extremely hard to get this medication. But, you know, hopefully that's going to be more widely used down the line. There is a lot of fear of resistance, and, you know, people don't want to be on antibiotic all the time. But if it's really preventing so many infections, that's going to have a huge impact on numbers and whatnot, and the spread of STIs, which is, they're always around, and thankfully there's medications you can take to treat them, but
sure,
better not have it in the first place.
Right. I mean, it's not, sure, I understand. When you said it was difficult to get, I don't quite understand. I know that I'm a retired dentist, actually. My husband's a retired physician, and doxycycline is an incredibly inexpensive drug. So it's not the cost, it's it's getting the doctor to prescribe it for that reason. Is that what you're saying?
Right. Yes.
Oh, okay.
And there are some doctors who are very open-minded and know the current research and know how well it works, but may decide to sign off on the prescription. But a lot of doctors don't know about it.
Right.
And it's, like I said, it's not even FDA approved. So it's not something widely used. But you know, unfortunately, the DoxyPep study has stopped enrolling participants. So I'm not really sure where it's going to go from here. This paper that was published a few months ago showed promising results, but I'm not sure what's happening now and what's going to happen in terms of FDA approval. But I know it works. I know all the people on it. And it's remarkable to know that that effective if we take it.
Yeah, I was, as I said, I didn't know anything about it. I know that the paper was presented in Montreal a few weeks ago. Is that right? Yeah. Yeah, it was Montreal. And I was kind of excited to read it because, you know, it PEP, by the way, PEP, we've been saying the word DoxyPep. PEP is post-exposure prophylaxis, and PrEP is pre-exposure prophylaxis. So they're two different terms, right? Am I saying that right?
Yes. So the same would be used for like HIV PEP and HIV PrEP, but in terms of doxy, it's like about bacterial STIs.
Right.
But what I didn't really talk about was doxy PrEP, which is even used less, but it's when you take doxycycline every day. I don't really know too many people, but I don't even know of any studies studying it, but I just know it's something that some people do off-label. And whoever can have access to doxycycline, that's another way they help prevent STIs.
Okay. Right. So it can prevent them pre-exposure, but you have to take it every day, obviously, since
yes,
you don't know when
people who are really kind of active.
Well, that's okay. It's a healthy. You shouldn't.
Oh yeah.
Active good.
If it works, that's great.
Yeah. Oh sure. I'm going to ask. We're going to move to another subject here. How do you think the pandemic, the COVID pandemic, and the isolation? Do you think that set us all back with getting people into doctors' offices and the word out?
Doctor's office for
just to go in to see a doctor to be reminded about this for blood tests, things like that. I've heard that even HIV positive people messed up on their medications because of the pandemic. You know, that they were afraid to go to the doctor. They were afraid the access.
Right.
We had a whole access thing.
I mean, hospitals, doctor's offices for a while were kind of
labs.
Scary places to be. And, I can understand why people would fear going out in public to a hospital for labs.
Right.
But that totally makes sense because I was working at a sexual health clinic at the time, and we were kind of forced by the health department to reduce our appointments, just have as few people in the building as possible. And our numbers for testing went way down. So HIV testing way down, STI testing way down. This is kind of, you know, especially during the height of shelter in place. And I'd never really worked in an HIV care facility or primary care, but I imagine that they had also cut down in certain ways.
Right. And of course, the marginalized community, was even worse. I mean, if you were in, you know, if you didn't have, you know, access to a computer to have a Zoom meeting or, you know, it really did. I think it did set us back. And I hope to God that we're all better off now and everybody's back to a normal cycle. But I think it did set us back.
Yeah, if you look at the epidemiology reports from 2020 especially, you can see those numbers reflected in cases and testing. During that time, we really didn't know what was going on with HIV, like new infections and STIs. Because the numbers were just not there, and we assumed people were having sex, of course. People were having sex in the pandemic. Totally understandable.
Sure.
But we weren't really sure what was happening.
Right. There. Exactly. Yeah, I think, and I hope that we've gotten back to an equilibrium, or I guess we did, because the monkeypox has been effective here in South Florida. You mentioned that it was effective in your community, that it has tapered off. So there are still new infections. I looked it up today. There were still 30 infections last week here in the county I'm in, Broward County. So it's not done yet. So yeah, we're not over. It ain't over.
Who knows what's next? So
I know. But you've got to be prepared, and people like you who have a firm foothold on social media and are personable and know how to speak to people without judgment, we're prepared. Okay. So what doesn't work with this, with getting people on PrEP or getting them into testing for HIV and STIs? What doesn't work?
What doesn't work, I think, is slut shaming and also kind of using fear as a tactic and kind of worst case scenario, using these sorts of techniques to scare people into testing, really is creating a barrier and makes people not want to test. So I think as long as we're kind of open and understanding of people's sexuality and their desire for sex and use, a real approach and kind of meet people where they're at. They're all great ways to reach out to people and bring them into whatever services that are needed. And yes, fear is bad. Don't use fear. And slut shaming also.
Yeah. Okay. So I agree with you that the fear. So we have 1 minute left. And I want to ask you the question I ask all my people is, what would you say in 30 seconds to some young man that walks up to you or young woman and wants to say, I want to be just like you. How do I do it?
Oh, well, be just like me. Oh, well, let's see. I would say use what you have in your life and use who you are to spread your message and help people around you.
Good. Everyone's got a voice. You're exactly right. Okay. Well, that wraps it up. Thank you so much. This is so much fun. And I want to say good night.
Thank you.
Thank you again. Take care. Good night.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.